Anyhow, we have a new president. I saw something that said that 23 or 24 out of 26 of these polls that they take said that Hillary Clinton was going to win. But she didn't. So those polls were almost always wrong. We have a new president, and so the question that we ask ourselves is, will it be better now? Are things going to all of a sudden straighten out? Will all the things that are wrong, will they be made right? Will Donald Trump be our savior? And you know, this country is so divided that I don't think that either side had won, the results would be probably just about the same. Bernie Sanders has already said he'll be Donald Trump's worst nightmare. So you won't get too much cooperation there. Elizabeth Warren, I saw her giving a speech, and her eyes were bulged out, and her veins were bulged out, and her arms were flailing around all over the place, vowing that she'll do everything within her power to make sure that any of these liberal things, you know, abortion, gay rights, and some of the stuff that we heard about on the on the Beyond Today, do everything in her power to block those things. In fact, I've even heard floating around a little bit that they'll try to put her up for the nominee in 4 years, which maybe will happen. I don't know. Saw all the riots, you know, in the major cities, you know, Seattle and Chicago, even Minneapolis. They had people walking the streets protesting the election. And I read about some of these liberal professors in these colleges giving their students a day or two off because they were so stressed about the election. So he thought they should have a day or two off to kind of de-stress a little bit. He put off the exams because a couple of examples where I heard they were putting off the exams because the kids were so stressed that they probably wouldn't be able to do a very good job on the exams. And the poor, delicate little flowers had to have some time to unwind and accept the fact that it didn't go their way. I keep wondering what you suppose would happen if they had to face a real crisis, if they had to face a real disaster. And world events continue to muddle along without any clear sense that there's any leadership to help straighten things out. Large-scale war in the Middle East is a possibility, and you know the mess that's in the Middle East. Europe's economic crisis and all the things that's going on over there, the invasion of the Muslim world into Europe, and all the problems that that's causing. Maybe some of the positive things that may happen will be maybe the Supreme Court won't be stocked with another extremely radical social liberal. Maybe it'll slow the flood of mostly Muslim immigrants, and maybe they'll beef up the military, and maybe they'll defund plant murderers, I mean Parenthood, responsible for over 25% of the abortions in this country. Maybe they'll shut down some of the refugee cities that illegal criminals hide in, and evidently the federal arm of the law can't go in there and do much about it. Maybe they'll undo the nuclear deal with Iran. Maybe they'll do something with Obamacare. But I saw already that Donald Trump has said there's some things about Obamacare that are really good and he really likes and he'll probably like to keep. So, I don't know. Maybe it'll be something like, remember Jesse Ventura? Remember our governor a few years back? Boy, he talked tough before he was elected. Oh, he talked tough. And there was no way that abortion was going to survive under his leadership. And yet he wasn't in office very long before he folded like a deck of cards in a hurricane. And pretty much everything that he said he was going to be against, nothing really much changed and nothing really much happened. I don't know. Maybe it'll be the same thing here. I don't know. Time will tell. We hear about world leaders getting together and trying to hammer out the problems. You know, we hear about all these conferences and, you know, the G8 conference that they have from time to time. And you think with all these very smart people that get together, that they could hammer out something, that they could figure out something. So we have these conferences, and they usually end up with a bunch of double talk that doesn't really mean anything at all. I think the last one I saw where their statement after the conference was that they had an emerging consensus. And all that is a bunch of double talk for we didn't get anything done at all. And we didn't agree on anything. And it's just as big a mess now as it was when we went in there. That's just a bunch of double talk. And that's what it means. Meetings like those demonstrate more than anything else that there is a critical lack of leadership among the world's leaders today. Leaders meet and they talk, but crisis after crisis continue. And many times it costs the lives of thousands of people and stifles any progress toward positive solutions for the many, many growing problems of the world. And by the way, the title of this message today is Crisis of Leadership. If you like titles and want a title. The economic challenges facing Europe and America continue. And unfortunately, there's no real solution in sight. European leaders have met repeatedly for months trying to resolve the Eurozone financial crisis that was created by the debt-ridden economies of some of the nations that would probably sound familiar, Greece probably coming to mind, but also Italy and Ireland and Portugal and Spain, with debts so huge that they can't repay them back. And so it puts a financial strain on the rest of the nations. And the United States economy, you know, it kind of sputters along here. And it's sort of trying to rise out of a recession that was brought on by the very near collapse of Wall Street. That one was actually back in about 2008, but the U.S. recovery has been sporadic. I mean, some people have recovered very well, others people haven't at all. So it's kind of been lethargic and anemic and slow and sluggish and hasn't really come back as a recovery as, you know, do a lot of times. And so we're kind of still stuck in that. Eight years later even. So, what we're watching among today's world leaders is, like I said, a crisis in leadership. Meeting after meeting is held to discuss the European debt crisis and the invasion of basically the Muslim world. And to try to find a solution to things like that, diplomatic problems in the Middle East, of course, continue. Summits are held, conferences are arranged, plans are made, but nothing changes. And the problems persist. It seems like real solutions, it seems like lasting solutions, just don't materialize. They just don't materialize. And you might say, why is that? Why in the world is that? All these leaders with all this power behind them, and they get together, talk, and nothing happens. What could be the outcome of such a lack of leadership on the world scene? What's the ultimate outcome of this? We can spend the rest of the time just talking about all the crisis points in this country and around the world, but, you know, we don't have anywhere near enough time for that. But a look around the world scene shows many, many, many crisis spots. You know, we heard about the Arab Spring some years back, but now we say it's the Arab Spring that wasn't. You remember when our president, Obama, went to all these Muslim countries and apologized for America being so great. But we were so arrogant. And we were pushing our weight around. And we're so sorry for that now. And we grovel down at your feet and beg your forgiveness. And he thought that by doing this, oh, then we would be loved. He'd gain the respect and the love and the support of all those nations that he went against. And all that amounted to him is they looked at him as a weak, incompetent leader. And they basically just laughed in his face and it weakened their country. That's probably one of the biggest mistakes. I don't know if it was a mistake, but that was one of the biggest disasters that came out of his presidency. There were many. That was one of them. Iran's nuclear ambitions. Well, there's another crisis right there. You know, Obama has guaranteed that Iran will get the bomb if it doesn't have it already. No U.S. inspectors. No U.S. inspectors can go in there and have a look. They'll do their own inspecting, and if they do something wrong, they'll tell us about it. And there's, oh, great idea. Oh, we'll fall for that one. And they did. And on top of that, Iran was not supposed to be working on developing rockets. And they've got, you know, they're right on, I mean, they've got the rockets already. They've developed them right underneath the nose of our leadership that we have in this country. And they've got rockets now that will accept multi-headed nuclear warheads that have rockets now that have the capacity, the capability of shooting them over and to hit our shores. And we sat around, twiddled our thumbs, and great idea. Won't do anything about it. You can drop bombs right next to our warships and send jets, strafing our battleships. And I wonder what would happen if they did that to Dwight Eisenhower or even Harry Truman, who said drop the bomb and end the war. But we've got leadership now that anything goes. Draw a line in the sand means absolutely nothing. Cross that. You know, and after you draw a couple lines in the sand and it gets crossed, you know what your enemy thinks? It thinks, I'll bet you we could draw as many lines in the sand. If they could draw as many lines in the sand as they want to, we could walk right across them and nothing will happen. And you know what? They're absolutely right. We've proven that. That's the kind of leadership that we've had in this country. Then, even after we've guaranteed in this agreement that we had in Iran that, you know, practically guarantees that they'll have the bomb, we only gave them, well, we didn't give them, but I understand we released assets worth $150 billion. What do you suppose they would do with assets like that? What do you suppose they would do with money like that? Well, we know what they're doing with it. They're funding terrorism around the world. That's what they're doing with it. So you see, when we say that there is a drastic lack of leadership around the world, but certainly in this country, well, all we have to do is open our eyes and we can see it. And we can see it very, very clearly. Very, very clearly. The world's response to Syria's crisis is another example of failure in our leadership. Opposition forces to President Assad's regime have been unable to accomplish a regime change. And thousands of lives, civilian lives even, have been slaughtered in the years in that long civil war. And like I said, our president drew these lines in the sand. If they use poisonous gas, we're going in. Well, they did that, and nothing happened. And if they, I forget what all the things was that he drew the lines in the sand, but they walked across every one of them, nothing happened. So he empty calls for the United Nations to stop all those things that failed to produce any solution. United Nations, for all practical purposes, is nothing but a sounding board for propaganda from our enemies. Syria has been given cover by China. Syria has been given cover by Russia. And to wage war on its citizens to keep the current regime in power, that's what's been basically allowed. No one from any major world power has demonstrated the leadership necessary to stop all that action by a government against its own people. They're still in power, still are. The lessons of Afghanistan is an example of American support. Afghan insurgents against the Soviet Union. We supplied them with money. We supplied them with hardware. And when the Soviets were beaten back into retreat because of the help that we gave, what did our country do? Instead of going in and taking charge and stabilizing things, we pulled out too. So when Russia pulled out and we pulled out, what was left? Big vacuum. Big, big vacuum. And so what happened? Well, a fellow by the name of Osama bin Laden fell in place there. And Al-Qaeda operations got those running. And what did that lead to? Well, only a little thing that we talk about, and we call it 9/11. That's what happens, you see, when there's no leadership. Here's something to take a note on. Alliances that are bought with weapons of destruction and money will not endure. We have all these allies, see? We have all these allies. And see, here's the question. Are they our allies because they just love us so much, they just love our country and love our way of life? Or do they love all the money that we give them? Have to think about that one a while. That's a real hard question to answer. It's like if you have a really rich uncle, and he gives you money, and buys you cars, he gives you all kinds of stuff, and he's your favorite uncle until his money runs out and he can't buy you stuff anymore. So we have all these allies around the world, but one of the things that are common between all these allies is that we just shovel baskets full of money at them, and we call them our allies. There's a fellow in the Bible that talked about that. His name was Jeremiah. And he spoke to Jerusalem about its alliances with other nations, which in God's sight were wrong to the point of being immoral. He used the term lovers. He used the term lovers for those allies. But that it denotes a false relationship based on what? Based on greed and based on a lack of trust in God himself. For Judah and Jerusalem, this violated the covenant they had with God. And for the United States, which we're doing the same thing, it violates a relationship with God based on the promises to Abraham that are still in effect today, believe it or not. A covenant still in effect and governing the role of America in today's world. Jeremiah chapter 30. Why don't we just look there really quick? Jeremiah chapter 30. Jeremiah chapter 30 and verse 14. Kind of interesting how that's put here. I've got the New King James. It says, "All your lovers have forgotten you. They do not seek you, for I have wounded you with the wound of an enemy. Because America has not demonstrated the kind of leadership that God wanted it to have over the nations." And God based the relationship with God on the promises to Abraham that are still in effect. But America has not demonstrated the godly leadership among the nations that it was supposed to. America will not be the only nation to suffer with treachery and faithlessness because of flawed alliances. Today's crisis in leadership, which, by the way, is worldwide, I think we know, will open the doors for a coming power the Bible describes as the beast. You see, there are vacuums that are created when leadership is removed from a certain area. And as American leadership has virtually disappeared off the face of the earth, this vacuum has been created. The term denotes a political empire and its leader, the beast it's called. And this political power will emerge on the world scene at a time of seemingly unsolvable crisis. Kind of interesting to think about that a little bit. Unsolvable crisis. When things are going to happen, and things are going to get so bad, and nobody is going to be able to say, I know how to fix this. I know what to do. I know how to make this go away. This leader will have the answers. After everybody else scratches their head and throws up their hands and says, can't be done, can't be fixed, we're doomed, we're going down the drain, there's going to be somebody that stands up and he's going to say, I've got it, I know how to fix it. And this world is going to, well, especially Europe, they're going to embrace him with open arms. People will support him to the point where the Bible, it describes it as worship. Look at Revelation chapter 13. Revelation chapter 13, jumping ahead in history here just a little bit. Maybe not very far. Revelation chapter 13 and verse 1. And it says, then I stood on the sand of the sea. We have familiar scriptures, we've read them before. And I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, having seven heads and ten horns, and on his horns ten crowns, and on his heads a blasphemous name. Now the beast which I saw was like a leopard. His feet were like the feet of a bear, and his mouth like the mouth of a lion. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. The powers of historic empires represented by these symbols in Daniel. We can look at Daniel chapter 7. We're not going to, but we can look at Daniel chapter 7 to kind of get a definition of these feet of a bear and leopards and those things. And the dragon gave him his power, his throne, and great authority. And I saw one of the heads as it had been mortally wounded, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world marveled and followed the beast. So they worshipped the dragon, who gave authority to the beast, and they worshipped the beast. They say, who is like this beast? Who is able to make war with him? The beast, the leader, the system, received power, it says, from the dragon. Symbol for the devil. Revelation chapter 12, verse 9. If you're in Revelation 13, we're right across the page. Revelation chapter 12, verse 9 says, so the great dragon was cast out, the serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world, and he was cast to the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. So that great dragon, that serpent, it's talking about the power behind this beast is being Satan the devil, who has no love for mankind and no love for God. And his whole purpose for thousands of who knows how many eons of time has been the destruction of God and his purpose and his creation. This beast, this leader and system received power from the dragon, which is a symbol for Satan the devil. We can just look at Revelation 12, 9. We just read Revelation 12, 9. The God of this age. 2 Corinthians 4, verse 4 says, you know, that God, that Satan is the God of this age. 10 kings give their authority to one leader to solve a world crisis in leadership. And that leader will be idolized, they'll be worshipped, the scriptures say. Worshipped by people as the one leader who can bring order among the nations and ensure the continuation of a period of global expansion and prosperity. A way of life. Some event will trigger the rise at a moment that no one else has the answer in a crisis that threatens the world order. For the most part, most of the world is relatively prosperous. Trade, you know, people have a decent standard of living, you know, have automobiles and color TVs and enough to eat for the most part. Most people do. Some don't, but most do. Especially in this country, you know, we're anybody in this country that says they're poor, they're not, compared to how things used to be in the Middle Ages and for most of humanity's existence. But we ask ourselves the question again: could all of those things, could this beast power, could it possibly rise today? When we look at these prophecies in the Bible, it raises the question, could this happen today? How could one person be granted so much power and status described by these prophecies about the powerful, about this beast? How could that be? How could somebody like that raise up? How could somebody like that come into power? How could it happen? Well, it could easily come about, even in a world as interconnected as this, or because of the world is so interconnected, maybe, because nothing can happen on the whole face of the earth that we can't know about in just a couple minutes because of all our satellite communication. And, you know, we can see something happen over in Europe someplace, and in a few minutes we can watch it on our TV. It's there. We can see it. Instant communication. We can talk to anybody almost on the face of the whole earth just by, you know, these all the different ways we have of doing that. And travel. You know, we just got back from the feast, and people, just in our congregation, went northwest, south, every direction. And we just got on airplanes, and in a few hours, you could be thousands of miles away. That could never happen before, but it could happen now. So we have an interconnected world like never before. And even with a skeptical public where government and traditional authority and structures are challenged, there'd still be an opportunity for a person like that to arise. Because you see, even in a skeptical society like we have now, where nobody cares much about authority, nobody cares much about the rule of law, and everybody kind of figures they can do their own thing. And I see that our protesters up in Minneapolis shut 94 down again the other day, which I think is absolutely crazy. They can protest if they want to, but don't shut down the road. You know, people might be trying to get to work maybe so that they can pay their taxes, so they can make sure that they get their Section 8 housing or whatever it is. Well, that's another subject. So, could this happen today? Yeah, it could happen today. It could happen today when there seems to be no answer to the problems, especially that are affecting Europe. No answer. Keep in mind that this person works with tremendous help. Spiritual forces that are unseen and whose existence and influence are not realized by our modern skeptical society. I've mentioned before, but what Scott Ashley always says, when you see things happen that don't make any sense by our leadership, think about what's going on in the spirit world behind the scenes. Think about what's going on in the spirit world behind the scenes when all these things come to pass, because we've just read about how the dragon, Satan, is behind all of it and orchestrating all of it and bringing it about in one final last-ditch attempt to knock God off his throne and destroy his plan. The beast power will work with the aid of the rulers of the darkness of this age. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. I can turn that. Or you can go there if you want to. Ephesians 6, 12. I'm right there. Ephesians 6:12. For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this age, against spiritual hosts of wickedness in heavenly places or in high places. That's where the enemy is. That's why he will be accorded near godlike status. You know, Satan always did want to be worshipped, and here it talks about a time when the forces that he's behind are actually worshipped. I can imagine such a leader as one who possesses her promises to preserve the good life that people want, and they don't want to see that go away. Since the end of World War II, the world economy has risen to extremely high levels of ease and wealth and convenience. Everyone, even the poorest people, have benefited from the rise in the general standard of living. And threaten that system with collapse, and people will put their trust in anyone who can promise to sustain and protect their lives, their livelihoods, their way of life, their ease that they have. If only this person were given the authority to implement that progress. Only if he would be given that authority, well, we'll see that he will be. We can look at some lessons from history. Probably think about one of the most evil leaders of the 20th century. We have several names come to mind, but Adolf Hitler certainly does come to mind. And his plan to conquer Europe and then the world, and his efforts to eliminate the Jews with a Holocaust, continue to impact our thoughts even to this day. And that wasn't that long ago. That was back in the 1930s and early 1940s. That wasn't that long ago. That wasn't even 100 years ago. Not even a century ago. There's people in this room that was alive when those things happened. And the fact that he acquired the power and all that support, the heart of Germany, one of Europe's most cultured and civilized nations, he basically took over that nation. And his effort to exterminate the Jews through a Holocaust. And we know the pictures, you know, we've seen the pictures, we've heard the stories about the death camps and gas chambers and those kind of things, where millions of people died. And the fact that he acquired power and support, Germany was the most cultured and civilized nation at the time. And then he used its resources to plunge the world into war. And it happens to be a lesson that something like that could happen again. And here's the other strange part about it. Hitler gained that power legitimately. It wasn't a military coup. He didn't storm legislature, whatever. He had a legitimate mandate from the government at the time for that power. Strange as that sounds, Hitler had a legitimate ballot of the nation. He became Chancellor of the German Republic January 30th, 1933. And it was thought that the National Socialist Party, well, we call it the Nazi Party, could restore Germany to its rightful place in power within Europe. Because, see, here's what had happened. Germany had been beat up pretty bad in World War I. And the Allied powers had a clamp on them. It was a humiliating peace, is how they called it. It was imposed by the Allied powers and the subsequent economic problems that brought the German people to the point where they were willing to turn control over to a former person from Austria. You remember some of the problems they had in Germany at the time? They talked about wheelbarrows full of money, you know, inflation. A wheelbarrow full of money to buy a loaf of bread. You know, we heard of things like that. That's the situation that was going on over there. And, of course, the people were worried and scared and everything else. But somebody shows up and says, I can fix this. He ended up with the political power of the state, but that wasn't good enough to achieve what he wanted to achieve. And he quickly set out to take complete power, complete control, total control. He needed a controlling majority in the Germans' elected parliament. But he was short. He was short about 70 seats. And he maneuvered around, and Hitler was able to call for a new election. And the Nazi Party still needed to win the votes, and it still didn't quite happen yet. So what did he do? Well, it's kind of interesting because a huge fire broke out just a few days before the election, and all the chaos and everything that that created. And they, of course, the Nazis blamed everybody in the country about it except themselves, which it seems as though most researchers pretty much think that the Nazis set that fire themselves, and it became a convenient means to an end. And you know the kind of power that Hitler ended up with. Hitler was able to secure a decree for the protection of the people and the state. Things are going bad here, folks, but I can fix it. And even sections of the Constitution guaranteeing individual civil liberties were suspended. Vast power was granted to Hitler to bring other parts of the state in line. People were afraid. And people were urged to vote for the Nazi Party to ensure peace and liberty. And so that's how he legally came into power. When the votes were tallied, Hitler's party was still several seats short of the majority it needed. And it's kind of interesting what Hitler did. The German government was arranged so that a measure of prestige and honor was held by the president. Paul von Hindenburg was his name. He was an old and highly respected general. And what happened was the display of humility and subservience. Hitler paid homage to that old leader before the assembled parliament. And when they saw Hitler kind of pay homage to this highly respected fellow, all fear and all suspicion of Hitler and his party and his tactics were forgotten for a moment. And everybody said, here it is, we'll give you all this power. And 2 days later, the parliament passed what was called the Enabling Act. In that document, parliament ceded power of legislation, control of the budget, freedom of treaties, approval of treaties with foreign states, and the initiating of constitutional amendments to Hitler and his cabinet for a period of 4 years. And that single act, a legitimately constituted body of the elected officials, formed the legal basis for Hitler's dictatorship. It was all done legally. And it happened very, very quickly. From March 23rd, 1933, until his death in an underground bunker in Berlin in May 1945, Hitler was the undisputed Führer, the leader. His takeover was accomplished within 60 days of his first assuming office. 2 months, 60 days. Very, very short time. And through the clever of intrigue and a vile man, was able to give honor and seize the control of the German nation in 60 days. Kind of an interesting parallel in Daniel chapter 11, verse 21. I guess we could probably go there once. Daniel 11, 21. Talking about the kings of the north and the kings of the south. Kind of interesting what it says in Daniel 11, 21. And in his place shall arise a vile person, to whom they will not give the honor of royalty, but he shall come in peaceably and seize the kingdom by intrigue. And that's pretty much exactly what Hitler did, but it looks like it's got a dual purpose here. Could history repeat itself? We wonder. Well, here's a thought that I had wondered about for a while. We saw that Europe was in chaos back when Hitler took control. And we know that something is going to happen over in Europe that's going to bring it to the point where it's going to say, we can't fix this. We don't know what to do. And no leader steps up and has what it takes to lead the continent out of the troubles that it's in. Here's just a thought, and I don't know if it has any credence or not, but it's just a thought that I've had for a long time. Europe's common major problem right now seems to be that it's being overrun by foreigners. They're wrecking havoc all over the nation over there, all over the continent over there. And when you have weak, incompetent, foolish leaders that just open up the floodgates and allow them to flood in just like water pouring through a busted dam, and they will not do anything about it, they stubbornly dig in their heels and say, that's what we're going to continue to do. The problems over there are becoming to be worse, more and more problems over there all the time. Now, as far as immigration goes, if people want to migrate to a nation and they want to live there peacefully and they want to get a job and they want to pay taxes and raise their families, fine. But that's not what's happening over there. Some of you get this Texas bulletin thing that we get every week. It's put out by Dr. Ward, and it's sent around to a lot of different people. But in this one Texas bulletin, it talked about some of the things that were going on with the invasion of these immigrants over in Europe. 4 pages of it. I printed off these 4 pages. I don't know if it was last week or the week before. I'm going to read you just a few things. What do I got here for time? Yeah, we're doing pretty fair. Just want to read you a few things that was published in this Texas bulletin. German streets descend into lawlessness. We are losing control of the streets. This was on November 1st, 2016. This is brand new. And it's been going on. But listen, I'm just going to read a few of them. Don't have time to read 4 pages worth. During the first 6 months of 2016, migrants committed 142,500 crimes, according to the Federal Criminal Police Office. This is equivalent to 780 crimes committed by migrants every day, an increase of nearly 40% over 2015. The data included only those crimes in which a suspect has been caught, so you know it's at least twice that much. Thousands of migrants who entered the country as asylum seekers or refugees have gone missing. They are presumably economic migrants who enter Germany on false pretenses. Many are thought to be engaged in robbery and criminal violence. Local police in many parts of the country admit that they are stretched to the limit and are unable to maintain law and order. Drug trafficking takes place right before our eyes. If we intervene, we are threatened, spit on, insulted. Sometimes they whip out a knife. They're always the same people. They're ruthless, fearless, and have no problem with robbing even the elderly. This was from a private security guard. Offenders are released on probation or whatever. Yes, what is happening in the courts today is a joke. A German police officer wrote that. And like I said, there's 4 pages of this going on. This is just Germany. But I understand what I've heard, that France is, for all practical purposes, a Muslim state. The mosques are everywhere. You can't say anything about them because that's hate speech and you can be thrown in jail for it. It's not much. I mean, we don't have it a whole lot different here. Someone decides they don't want to bake cake because of their moral beliefs for gay marriage. But they don't have the right to do that. In fact, that one out in, was it Oregon or wherever it was? They're out of business now. They were forced out of business. They had a $135,000 fine levied against them because they wouldn't bake that cake. And they paid 9% interest on that fine. So they're out of business. They couldn't stay in business because they wouldn't go against their principles. And there's, how many other examples like that around our country. See, leadership, the leaders of a country, they have the responsibility to protect their citizens, and they also have a responsibility to enforce the laws of the land. And when you let immigrants, migrants, whatever you want to call them, just come and run helter-skelter over your land and take over and hurt your people and stab them and rob them and rape them and everything else, and you sit by and twiddle your thumbs and say, well, we're not going to do anything about it except maybe we'll just let a couple million more in. That's not leadership. And I hate to bring up the name of Angela Merkel, but she's the Chancellor of Germany, and she should be impeached. She's coming up for re-election. She doesn't have zero chance of getting re-elected. I don't know why she's still the leader of that country. She shouldn't be. We have good friends. A lot of you in this room know Vernon and Anita Cardell, good friends of ours. She has German citizenship. And this spring, she went over to Germany to visit her sister. And she said that if you're walking down the street and some of these, she calls them thugs, come at you, they don't step aside for you. They push you out into the street so that they can walk by. And she said one of the big worries, real worries that they have over there right now is that if you live in a house or you live in an apartment, and just say it's, you and your wife and a child or whatever it is, and you've got more room than you need, and you've got maybe one or two extra rooms in the house or apartment or whatever it is you live in, they're afraid the government is going to step in and say, we've got all these refugees and no place to put them, and they'll force them. They don't have any say in it. They force them to put those people in your home against your will. And they're very much afraid that that's going to happen over there. So here's the question that I've got. What if that gets worse, if it can get much worse? What if it gets worse? What if it gets to the point that the citizens over there don't know what to do because their leaders do nothing except make the problem worse? What if, just what if, I'm just saying, just what if, somebody stood up and said, I know how to fix this. And you remember the Jews, not the Jews, but you remember the Germans back in the Second World War, and you remember what they did to the Jews and what they did to other nationalities too. But what if, just what if, that same mentality came back, and what if those ovens were fired up again, but not for the Jews this time, but for the Muslims? I don't know. Just a thought I've had. But things are worse over there than we know. Much worse than we know. And it's not just Germany. It's the Scandinavian countries, too, which have basically been overrun by thugs. And Holland, Netherlands. It's all over. What do we got for time? Here's another one. In a best-selling book, Tanya Cambori, a German police officer, describes the deteriorating security situation in Germany due to migrants who, she says, have no respect for law and order. In an interview with Deutschland Radio, she said, for weeks, months, and years, I have noticed that Muslims, mostly young men, do not have even a minimum level of respect for the police. When we are out on patrol of the streets, they are verbally abusive to young by young Muslims. There's a body language and insults when passing by, and if we make a traffic stop, the aggression increases even further. This is overwhelmingly the case with migrants. Then it goes on. There's four pages of this stuff. Maybe you've seen it, and if you want to see it, I've got a copy. Otherwise, we send that out to people that want it every week. So you see things. There are things happening in the world, in our country. I mean, the same thing is happening in our country. Really, same thing is happening in our country. There's no respect for the law anymore. And there's certain areas, well, you know what? Our own city of St. Cloud, Minnesota. What do they say now? It's 25% Somali. And I'm not knocking the people or the race or anything else. But, we've all read what sometimes happens in areas like that. So could history repeat itself? And maybe it'll be something totally different. Maybe it'll be some other kind of a crisis that spikes this rise to a power, superpower, this beast that the scriptures talk about. Everybody will rush in and say, yeah, we'll get together. Yeah, you run things and let's get this thing straightened out. Maybe it'll be something else. I don't know. But it's just a thought I had when you see the mess that almost looks like it can't be straightened out now. I don't know how you would even straighten it out, even now, if somebody stepped in to straighten it out. the cops can't do a thing. And they talk about, some of the stories in here talk about people going to court. They drag these thugs into court. And you know what the judge does? Gives them 6 months probation, sends them back out so that they can rob somebody that night again. And so, I'm frustrated just reading about it. I can't imagine what it's like to live over there. So what's going to happen? We know what's going to happen eventually. We just don't know the catalyst. We don't know the spark that's going to set it off. But this, is a possibility. Maybe it'll be something else. Maybe it'll be something worse. Maybe it'll be a combination of things. I don't know. So could something like that happen today? Well, it really could. As people fail to learn the lessons of history, and as we have this unimaginably incompetent leadership, can't even call it leadership. It's not even close to leadership. The folly of today's leaders threatens the wealth and stability of a vast global network of wealth and power that has been building for decades. No one wants to see it end. The philosophy of let the good times roll expresses a driving need for a culture saturated with all the stuff that we've got, all the pleasures that we have in this world. No one wants the security, both present and future, threatened. Everybody wants the good life to continue. And then we look around today's world, and we don't see a leader that stands out as a person with the kind of talent and the kind of ability and ideas to bring nations together to ensure the continuation of this, of the way things are now. How long will a leadership drought continue? I don't know. The way things are in Europe, I can't imagine too much longer. How long will this leadership drought continue? Well, crisis after crisis continues. Well, no one with big enough ideas, big enough, large enough idea steps forward with the agenda to effect solutions. But at some point, there's going to be one crisis too many. At some point, it's going to be one disaster too many. And at the right time, of course, God will be in charge, that this beast power will rise up. And these other nations will give their authority and power to him and say, take care of this for us. And he'll say, I will do that. And so he'll have this power and this authority. And we're heading right straight into the tribulation when that happens. Until then, events continue to just kind of puddle and muddle along. Band-aids are put on very large problems. It's almost like our national debt. They don't do anything about it. They just kick the can down the road till the next year and vote another debt ceiling. We're $20 trillion in debt. And so now they just, we'll just have to raise the debt ceiling because we're not going to do anything to cut spending. Well, we surely can't do that, So the problem just gets kicked down the road. How far can you kick it? Well, here's my opinion. Here's what I think is going to bring the whole thing down. I think that when the petrodollar, where the price of oil and oil is bought and sold with dollars, when that collapses, which it's going to because many, many, many nations don't want to use dollars anymore for the exchange of oil. When that happens, the economy collapses in this country. It can't help it. It's going to collapse. The dollar will collapse. And then this nation will go into recession that will make 1929 look like a Sunday school picnic. That's just what I think is going to happen. But I think that's what's going to at least be a big major trigger to get this thing started. So at some point, there's going to be one crisis too many. Until then, events continue to kind of puddle and muddle forward. And like I said, we put Band-Aids on really big problems and provides only temporary relief, but nothing permanent. And while no one stands out today with any ideas on how to get us out of this mess, the day will come. I think the day is going to come soon, when events will bring forward the person described in these prophecies, the beast. The present world cannot continue like it's been going. Changes will occur. And when they do, you're going to see unprecedented leadership emerge that will astound the world. And we know the mess that lays ahead. We know the disaster that lays ahead. And things will become worse than they have ever been before. Scripture tells us that. Times are going to be worse than they've ever been before. And they've been mighty, mighty bad in the past, if you look at some history. But then, at the last trump, and I thought, that's kind of ironic. The last trump. Well, we know what means trumpet. It's probably got absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump. But at the last, I'll say trumpet. But at the last trumpet, Christ comes back. And under the leadership of Jesus Christ and the removal of Satan, we might add, this poor, beat up, busted up, pounded to death, beat up old world will ultimately become the beautiful world that God had planned all along. We just came back from the feast, and I have no doubt that you heard a number of scriptures out of Isaiah, but let me just finish up with Isaiah chapter 11. Very, very, extremely well-known scripture that you probably heard at the feast. But I think we just kind of feel like I want to end this thing on an upper note, not a downer note, an upper note. Isaiah chapter 11, verse 6 through 9. And the wolf shall dwell with the lamb, and the leopard shall lie down with the young goat, and the calf and the young lion and the fatling together, and a little child shall lead them. The cow and the bear shall graze. Their young ones shall lie down together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. The nursing child shall play by the cobra's hole, and the weaned child shall put his hand in the viper's den, and they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountain, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Guess what? We're going to be part of that perfect leadership. Not just for a little while, but forever and ever. That's what lays ahead for us. We got to make it through the mess that's coming. But we'll get through it. And you know what? That's worth waiting for.